From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, part four of Fumed, a Texas standoff.
What they were counting on was that we were not smart enough to know we were being wronged, duped.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. TPR is partnering with the nonprofit newsroom Public Health Watch to amplify their investigative reporting on Channel View. That's a once quiet, unincorporated community outside of Houston. It's now in the heart of America's petrochemical industry, and the residents are dealing with a lot, explosions and toxins and more. The series is called Fumed, and we have all the episodes on our website at tpr.org. And now here's episode four of Fumed by Public Health Watch.
In April of 2015, Carolyn Stone was out on her front porch, sifting through her mail, when she pulled out a plain white envelope from the city of Houston. She lived in unincorporated Channel View. Why was the city of Houston sending her mail?
We're within the 5-mile extraterritorial jurisdiction of the city of Houston, which means that while we have no ability to vote or any say, any representation, they can tell us what we can and can't do.
Inside was a short letter from Houston's Department of Planning and Development saying it had received, quote, an application to allow a partial replatting of the Lakeview Homes addition. The application was filed on behalf of Harley Marine, which is now called Centerline Logistics. The Seattle-based company specializes in moving petroleum across the country. Carolyn had no idea what a replat was, and she didn't have a fancy real estate lawyer to help her. So she did what anyone else would do. She Googled it. After getting lost on a few message boards, she was pretty sure that a replat is basically a way to change the boundaries of a subdivision and its parcels of land. According to the letter, the purpose of this replat was to create something called, quote, an unrestricted reserve across the street from her house. I'm David Leffler. From Public Health Watch, this is Fumed, an investigative podcast about the people who live in the shadows of America's chemical plants and oil refineries. This season, a group of stubborn Texans try to salvage what's left of their working-class community. That's a problem, though, because they live in East Harris County, where the petrochemical industry calls the shots. In this episode, two of those stubborn people, Carolyn Stone and Greg Moss, are still clinging to the faint hope that someone will step up to save what remains of the Channel View they once knew. But as barge companies move into their neighborhoods, they begin to realize that if no one else is going to step in, maybe they'll have to. Part 4, Texas Standoff. Carolyn kept staring at the letter she'd received from the city of Houston. Something about it felt wrong, even ominous.
Our first reaction, mine and my neighbors, was, what the heck is an unrestricted reserve? What do they mean? You know, because we didn't have a clue. This unrestricted reserve is kind of a frightening term, especially when you live in Harris County.
The properties across the street from Carolyn's house were filled with trees and some empty houses, the last remnants of the neighbors who'd once lived there. A few barges already lined the properties. And according to the letter, a whole lot more were about to move in.
I called City of Houston Planning and Development and asked what that was, and they explained what it meant, that they were trying to remove our restrictions so they could build the facility.
Those restrictions Carolyn's referring to are the residential zoning restrictions that were guaranteed in the deed to her house. Houston and Harris County have notoriously loose zoning laws, which means industries sometimes sit side by side with homes and schools. but Carolyn and Bobby had always thought their deed protected them. Carolyn showed me the deed. It said, quote, "All lots, plots, or parcels of land shall be used for private residence purposes only." Its stance on heavy industry was clear. Quote, "No noxious or offensive industry, business, or activity shall be carried on upon any lot, nor shall anything be done on any lot to which may be or become an annoyance or nuisance to the neighborhood." Suddenly, any sense of security Carolyn and Bobby had left was gone. To understand why so many barges began moving into Channelview, you need to know a little about their specialized role in American commerce, especially in the petrochemical industry, and especially in the Houston Ship Channel. By mid-2015, the Port of Houston was the nation's largest importer and exporter of petroleum products, including plastics found in everyday items like shoes, disposable coffee cups, and clothing. The Ship Channel needed more barges to ferry chemicals and fuel between plants and ships. All those barges needed parking spaces, and real estate along the Ship Channel was scarce.
Well, we got to go somewhere because they're putting more and more barges in the system, and you can't put them on the Ship Channel because the economics don't work.
That's Tom Marion, vice president and lawyer for Buffalo Marine, one of several interconnected barge companies that were already operating in South Channelview back then. Buffalo was docking barges on Lakeside Drive, just a few lots down from Carolyn's house. One of the connected companies, Holtmar Land, was also buying up property in the river bottom, near Greg's house. Tom spent 25 years in the Coast Guard, where one of his specialties was barge regulation. Among the businesses Tom regulated was the company that now employs him, Buffalo Marine. Tom helped me understand why barges are so crucial to the petrochemical industry.
People need to get goods to market efficiently, effectively. So the barges, while they're large and they're lumbering and they don't move as fast as the trains or the trucks, every barge takes 70 trucks off the road or 45 rail cars.
One by one, Carolyn's neighbors with riverfront homes sold out to barge companies. It was as if another oil rush had swept through Channelview. Except the companies weren't fighting for oil. They were fighting for a newly precious commodity. Land along the San Jacinto, where they could park their barges between trips into the Ship Channel.
You know, it just snowballed without no common sense by the governing agencies to protect the people, the residents.
The industrial invasion wasn't the only thing changing the face of Channelview. Its demographics had changed, too. People who'd sold their waterfront property to industry moved away. So did a lot of workers with high-paying jobs in the petrochemical plants. This mass exodus, paired with Houston's exploding population, brought new people to Channelview searching for a cheap place to live. In 1990, 69% of Channelview's population was white. Only 19% was Hispanic. By 2010, the white population had shrunk to 22%. The percentage of Hispanic residents had more than tripled to 60%. George Galindo was part of that wave of change. I met George outside his South Channelview home. It was a brisk February afternoon. He's stout and strong. A nod to his past work as a scaffold builder on industrial sites in East Harris County. He was wearing a black t-shirt emblazoned with the words Galindo Smokers. That's the business he runs out of his home. He builds custom barbecue grills and smokers using old propane tanks. George's father moved to the area in the late 90s, just as the big shift began. Settling in Channelview allowed his dad to be close to his job at the chemical plants, without living side by side with them.
Whenever we moved in Channelview, I feel like there's a lot more older white people, or just white people in general. Now it's just mostly us Mexicans.
At first, the Galindos enjoyed many of the things that drew Carolyn there decades earlier. George grew up playing at the same Riverside Park where Bobby and Carolyn hung out as teenagers.
That was the spot to be, you know, back then. Friday, Saturday, Sundays, and everybody would be out there barbecuing, fishing, I mean, having a good family time.
But within a few years, the river was so polluted that George and his father stopped fishing from it, and nobody swam in it. The stench of chemicals floating off barges parked nearby and the grinding noise from the tugboats that pushed them became a part of daily life. More Latinos moved in, unaware of the dangers surrounding them.
A lot of people in this area don't know English, you know, and they're not going to want to argue with the state or some kind of official, you know what I mean? They're just going to take the way of life and be grateful that, I guess, they're even here. But they might not know, I guess, the dangers that they're going to, I guess, get exposed to.
Without a mayor or city council to fight on their behalf, Channelview's newcomers and old-timers were left to fend for themselves. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality occasionally monitored Channelview for pollution. When it did, the agency found problems. In 2002, the TCEQ placed part of South Channelview and the San Jacinto River on the agency's air pollutant watch list. Regulators were worried about benzene, a chemical that's long been linked to leukemia. In 2005 and 2006, a year before K-Solve caught fire, a team of TCEQ air monitoring experts zeroed in on Carolyn's neighborhood. The fumes were so strong outside of K-Solve that two of them reported that their eyes started burning and they got headaches immediately. Public Health Watch filed a series of open records requests with the TCEQ about these incidents. Documents showed that the agency was especially concerned about K-Solve and a handful of barge companies near Carolyn. Residents weren't told any of this. The agency didn't make anyone available to be interviewed for this podcast. In an emailed statement, a spokesperson said the experts' findings, quote, triggered actions at TCEQ that include placement of stationary air monitors, evaluation of air monitoring data, and follow-up investigations of potential pollutant sources. In a series of emails, K-Solve's CEO, Todd Riddle, pointed to other companies and nearby chemical barges as the primary sources of benzene pollution. He said his company spends, quote, hundreds of thousands of dollars annually to limit and prevent any harmful emissions of any substance. In mid-April 2015, about a week after Carolyn got her first letter from the city of Houston, she received another. It turns out, Harley Marine didn't want to commercialize just one residential plot of land. They wanted to combine several into one big commercial plot. Carolyn called the city's planning department. They told her the only way she and her neighbors could stop this from happening was to show up to a public hearing in a couple of weeks. So Carolyn and her neighbor went to a meeting in downtown Houston.
Neither one of us had ever been to a public hearing or anything, but, you know, it concerned us. Well, we get down there, and we're waiting, and we look down on the agenda and see that it's been withdrawn.
When Carolyn got home, she called the planning department again. Yes, she was told, Harley Marine had pulled its application.
He said they withdrew it because they were going to be denied anyway, because our restrictions prohibited it, and they had the legal determination from City of Houston Legal Department. So that was it. We thought it was over and done with. There would not be a facility over there.
By Thanksgiving, Carolyn had pushed Harley Marine out of her thoughts. She and Bobby drove to Atascocita, the Houston suburb where their two kids and three grandchildren lived. While the others played cornhole and sat around the fire pit, Carolyn whipped up carrot cake. It's a Stone family tradition. They didn't talk about Harley Marine the entire day. But the next morning, back home in Channelview, Carolyn saw something across the street that made her, quote, want to punch somebody. A big white sign was stuck in front of the sprawling piece of land. It showed a mock-up of a two-story building. In capital letters, it announced, Harley Marine Gulf, future home of regional headquarters.
It was like that, what the hell moment? How did this happen? We had this stock.
That night, she dug out her clunky old laptop and began researching Texas property law. She knew she was in over her head. But what she lacked in formal training and real estate know-how, she could make up for in persistence.
Trying to figure out who to go talk to is very, very difficult. Took a crash course on the Texas legal code to see, you know, why this was happening.
The more Carolyn learned, the more she peppered Harris County and the city of Houston with phone calls and emails. She said everyone insisted that Harley Marine's plans were on hold. But the sign stayed put. And after a few months, the government agencies stopped answering her calls.
I didn't know what was going on, but I know that I wasn't getting my phone calls returned. There seemed to be some very deep corruption going on. And I hate to say that, but I want to be wrong. Prove me wrong. Please, somebody prove me wrong.
I reached out repeatedly to Harris County's engineering department and Houston's planning department to ask about their interactions with Carolyn. Both agencies declined to be interviewed for this podcast. The county sent me an email saying it was, quote, unable to confirm or deny the validity of Ms. Stone's claims at this time and have no further statement to provide. The city stopped responding to me entirely. 4 months later, on a Saturday morning in March of 2016, another letter showed up in Carolyn's mailbox. Carolyn isn't the fainting type. She's not dramatic enough for that. But she nearly blacked out with rage when she read what was inside.
Dear Mr. and Mrs. Stone, Harley Marine Gulf is pleased to announce that we are starting this week to build our regional headquarters in Channelview. We apologize in advance for any inconvenience our construction may cause, and we will do our utmost to minimize any impact to you. My reaction was disappointment, frustration, anger, and such a, I don't even know how to put it in words, disillusionment with our governing entities, because you still always in the back of your mind, you think that they are out there to abide by the law and to protect where they can.
On Monday morning, Harley Marine moved in.
They had the street lined with equipment Monday morning before daybreak, and they went in and they mowed everything down. They mowed all the trees down and the residential houses down as quickly as they could. So they destroyed everything.
Carolyn frantically called the county, the city. She said everyone empathized with her situation, but nobody was willing to actually do something to help.
It was a moment of extreme desperation, I guess. It's like being in the penthouse of a skyscraper in the elevator, and the brakes failing, and you're plummeting down. There's no stopping, and you're pushing buttons. So you're calling all these people, and, you know, you're getting various responses. Oh, this is horrible. This should not be happening. Then they hang up from you.
The city and county declined to discuss their interactions with Carolyn that day. Harley Marine pushed ahead with construction.
There was no blocking out the noise. We live in a little wooden house that was built in the 30s. We'd shake stuff off the shelves. You would actually feel the vibrations within you and stuff.
Carolyn felt trapped. Like a lot of people in Texas, she and Bobby owned guns. But Frontier Justice hadn't saved Grandma Adcock, and she knew it wouldn't save her either. Carolyn was especially frustrated by what she didn't know. She couldn't understand how her neighborhood's deed restrictions were so easily cast aside, or why the government agencies had stopped answering her calls. But how could she get answers if nobody would talk to her? Then, one March afternoon, it came to her. She would file an open records request. An open records request is an application to receive publicly available information from a government agency. Carolyn had never filed one. It was yet another thing she had to learn how to do. After a little internet research, she decided to ask for everything she could think of. Internal emails, external emails, documents, meeting notes, permits. She filled out the submission forms on the city and county websites, triple-checked her work, and hit submit. Less than 2 weeks later, a trove of documents showed up on Carolyn's computer. Inside was a series of emails between Harley Marine and the city's planning department. They proved something Carolyn had suspected. At first, the city really had intended to deny Harley Marine's application. Armed with this information, Carolyn and her neighbor fired off a letter to Harley Marine's chairman and CEO, Harley Franco. They enclosed a copy of their subdivision's zoning restrictions and copies of the emails showing that the city of Houston had originally vetoed the project. The letter was dated April 5th, 2016. It was titled, Notice of Violation of Land Use Restrictions. Carolyn sounded like the self-taught lawyer she had become.
They thought they could come in and that this was a low-educated area, low-income area, that people would not have the intelligence to fight them, would cower down to their superiority. Is what they were counting on was that we were not smart enough to know we were being wronged, duped, crapped on.
That same month, Greg Moss stepped up his efforts to monitor the barges moving closer to the waste pits. 5 years had passed since he first heard about the Superfund site. He'd learned a lot since then. About advocacy, about Channelview, about himself. He'd become close friends with Jackie Young, the woman he'd admired at those early EPA meetings. She'd started her own nonprofit, the Texas Health and Environment Alliance. Jackie relied on Greg and his drones to keep track of what was going on near the waste pits. After every expedition, he loaded the pictures onto his computer and sent Jackie the standouts.
See, now you can see the pitch.
He'd found his purpose.
Well, it's something to do that's doing good instead of just going fishing or whatever, you know. At least it's doing some good for somebody, you know, for the community.
That purpose also weighed on him. Sometimes he wished he didn't know so much about the environmental threats that surrounded him, that he could just live in blissful ignorance. But what kept him going, what kept him angry, was that so little had been done to clean up the waste pits. The federal government had put a temporary cap on them in 2011. But that wasn't a long-term solution. Not with the San Jacinto continuing to rise. Not with the threat of the next big hurricane looming on the horizon. On April 20th, 2016, 15 days after Carolyn and her neighbor sent their letter to Harley Marine, Carolyn got one in return. Only, it wasn't from Harley Franco, the company's CEO. It was from Reed C. Wilson, a prominent Houston real estate lawyer who specializes in land use and zoning. Reed Wilson has connections across the state. He's chaired the real estate, probate, and trust law section of the State Bar of Texas. Carolyn gulped hard and tore open the letter. One sentence jumped out to her.
as Harley has the legal right to use and develop its property. It will aggressively defend any action seeking to interfere with those rights, including but not limited to seeking damages permitted by law.
When I first read Reed Wilson's letter, I was shocked by the gravity of his words. A powerful lawyer openly threatening to sue Carolyn if she kept causing problems. Carolyn said the letter made her feel less than human, like a pest that Harley and its bigwig law firm was trying to eradicate.
They have a right, a legal right, to use their property and to aggressively defend it. To imply that we as residents don't have those same rights is deeply offending and demeaning. It's a show of attitude that they are so much more superior to all of us, that, as he says, we're not being reasonable, expecting that we should live in a better environment.
I reached out to Reed Wilson a dozen times to ask him about this letter, but he never responded. I asked Harley Marine, now called Centerline Logistics, about the letter too. It also declined to comment. Carolyn stewed over Reed Wilson's letter for weeks. She was overmatched, and she knew it. So she doubled down on her effort to find a lawyer, someone who was gutsy enough, maybe even crazy enough, to take on a big-time barge company in the epicenter of the Texas petrochemical industry. If this were my story, it might have ended here. If I were Greg, I probably wouldn't have monitored the barges and waste pits for so many years. And if I were Carolyn, I probably would have surrendered the day Harley Marine's bulldozers rolled in, or the moment I got Reed Wilson's threatening letter. How could two ordinary people possibly defeat not just the petrochemical industry, but government agencies too? But Carolyn and Greg have something not many people have. A mulish instinct to dig in and push back against anyone trying to harm them or the people they love. True Texas grit. To put it bluntly, they do no harm, but they don't back down.
My great-grandfather was a Golden Gloves boxer. Plus, my daddy was a welder, so we were his welder's helpers, and we're always moving heavy iron and different things and stuff. So we were pretty strong and feisty bunch. No one ever messed with me in school, but I would go out of my way to avoid a confrontation. But if you were messing with my friends, I was not going to stand idly by and let them be harmed. I would stand up for my friends.
Next time on Fumed, Greg and Carolyn join forces as the stakes rise in embattled Channelview, and Carolyn finally gets the legal help she so desperately needs.
It was that kind of relief. Even now, I get kind of choked up talking about it, because it was such, to me, such a moment. You know, it was, you're drowning and you finally get the life ring around you and it's being pulled in.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. There are past episodes of Fumed at tpr.org, and you can also find them wherever you download cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.